WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. President Biden reaffirming the U.S.'s stance on the conflict in Israel after the nation agreed to a ceasefire with Hamas.
There is no shift in my commitment, the commitment to the security of Israel, period. No shift, not at all. But I tell you what there is a shift in. The shift is that we still need a two-state solution. It is the only answer.
He says he's also committed to providing security in the West Bank with hopes to help rebuild lost homes in Gaza. He's also calling for an end to the intercommunal fighting on both sides in Jerusalem. In cities like New York, officials worry tensions in the Middle East could inspire attacks on Jews.
Anti-Semitism has been on the rise even before this latest conflict between Israel and Hamas. But over these last few weeks, anti-Semitic attacks have surged to unprecedented levels. Cell phone video shows a Jewish man, Joseph Borgen, being beaten by a mob in New York City's famed Times Square. Police arrested one suspect and are searching for more. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio held an emergency meeting with Jewish leaders, assuring them that the attacks would be addressed forcefully. The attack happened during dueling protests as pro-Israel groups and pro-Palestinian groups took to the streets.
Fox's Lauren Green. The remaining 2,200 National Guard troops guarding the Capitol building are finally going home this weekend after more than 4 months on the job.
At its peak, there were over 25,000 National Guard troops here in Washington following the January 6 riot at the Capitol. The House narrowly approved a $1.9 billion supplemental bill to improve security at the Capitol. It passed by one vote. It includes $17 million for new surveillance systems and over $4 million for Capitol Police wellness and trauma support after the January 6 riots. No Republicans voted for the bill. The National Guard mission to the Capitol ends at midnight Sunday. At the Pentagon, Jennifer Griffin, Fox News.
D.C. police officers who responded to the Capitol riots were recognized for their work yesterday with Commendation of Valor Awards during the district's Employee Appreciation Ceremony. D.C. firefighters who went to the Capitol to treat injured people were also given the award. The city's health director, Dr. LaQuandra Nesbitt, was given an Excellence in Leadership Award for her work during the pandemic. If you're fully vaccinated, you may be wondering when you may need a booster shot. Virginia's vaccine coordinator, Dr. Danny Avula.
It's really hard to speculate on the timeline because so far, 6 months in, immunity still looks really strong. And so I think my guess would be that we probably won't need to look to boosters until 2022.
He says Pfizer and Moderna have been working on boosters. We won't need them until people's immunity starts dropping. WMAL Sports, the Capitals lost to the Bruins 4-1. The Bruins now lead their first round East Division playoff series 3-1. Game 5's tomorrow at 7. The Nats beat the Orioles 4-2. Game 2 in that series today at 4:05. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Maryland, the earlier accident on 95 southbound approaching 195 has been cleared, and it looks like the delays are starting to ease. In the district, you will find some slow traffic right now eastbound on the freeway at the ramp to the 3rd Street Tunnel with a work zone there, and it looks like some slowing traffic on DC 295 northbound approaching Benning Road with reports of another work zone. Now getting reports of a crash in Cap'n John, southbound on the Cap'n John Parkway near the Clara Barton Parkway. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
We'll see partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies today. We'll have filtered sunshine at times. It will be hotter, though. Highs back into the lower 90s this afternoon. Also, the outside chance for a stray shower through the afternoon hours, but a very low possibility for that. As we head later on tonight, lows back in the 50s to around 60 degrees under partly cloudy skies. For your Sunday, partly cloudy, still hot, highs in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9
FM, WMAL. Hour two of the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us each week. He is the White House correspondent at Newsmax TV and, of course, Newsmax.com, also the chief political columnist. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
A lot going on Capitol Hill and at the White House about Israel. And there's been a lot of debate between Democrats about which side is at fault and what should we do about weapon sales and everything else. Tell us a little bit about the divide in the Democratic Party this week.
I talked to three top advisors to national figures last week. One was Ronald Reagan's national security advisor, Dick Allen. The others were the communications director for Al Gore, Larry Haas, and John Hanna, formerly the national security advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. The verdict was unanimous. They all agree that the split in the Democratic Party on Israel that was so blatant last week is going to get worse. And when you get advisors to Ronald Reagan, Al Gore and Dick Cheney to agree on something, there's got to be some substance there. Simply put, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, embodied by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, AOC, and Bernie Sanders, made it clear what they've been whispering about and talking under their breath for a while, that our ally is Palestine, and we give them the short end of the stick when it comes to Israel. They put this in no uncertain terms, and both AOC in the House, Bernie Sanders in the Senate, introduced a measure to stop a weapons sale to Israel. Now, Joe Biden is a friend of Israel's in the mold of Harry Truman, the president who recognized the Jewish state in the 1940s. He is someone who has been to Israel many times, has a good personal relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu. There was no way that he was going to go over to what the progressive wing said. And in the end, when the president said, have a ceasefire, well, Netanyahu had a ceasefire, and the Palestinians went along with it, thanks to the go-between Egyptian President Sisi. In short, the ceasefire may exist, and there may be peace between Israel and Palestine for a while, but there is no ceasefire between the AOC wing and the White House. Virtually all of the people I talked about agreed that this is going to hamper and slow down the president in future efforts to protect Israel and negotiate a peace with the Palestinian Directorate.
John, the proposal for a commission to investigate the riots on January 6th at the Capitol cleared the House of Representatives, 35 House Republicans voting for that commission. Different story in the Senate. Give us a little background on what happened in the House and what to expect next in the Senate.
Reporters on all sides were surprised to see that 35 Republicans bolted the party leadership, defied leader Kevin McCarthy, and voted to create the January 6th Commission, investigating the violence that shook the Capitol in the beginning of the year. In the Senate, it's a different story. Leader McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, surprised people by saying he was against such a commission. And he and his associates began laying down the law. South Dakota's two Republican senators, John Thune and Mike Rounds, had both voiced positive sounds about the creation of a bipartisan commission. Now they've come out against it. There are at least six and possibly seven Republicans in the Senate who are open to the idea of a commission. But it's all a qualified opening. Susan Collins of Maine, for example, wants a time limit and a date when its work will be finished. Others are insisting that it's bipartisan, something that in the House has already been resolved. And still others say there should be an investigation as well into the murder of policemen across the country, something that has not been focused on while the nation focuses on the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis 1 year ago last week. In any event, It would seem at this point that there's too many points of disagreement in the Senate to reach what's called the Magic 10. In other words, 10 Republican senators who will vote with the 50 Democrats to break the filibuster and then have an up or down vote on a commission. The trial balloon of a commission has been floating, but there's some very sharp arrows coming at it from the Senate.
News stories in the past several weeks about a number of small business owners and larger businesses, for that matter, having trouble attracting workers, even though a lot of people have been out of work for almost a year now. 22 Republican-led states have decided to pull out of federal unemployment benefits. The Associated Press reporting it could be as early as June. Tell us both sides of that debate.
Well, on the Democratic side, they want support for Americans who are not in the workplace to continue until the COVID crisis is finally over. That could be in July, as the president has hopefully suggested. It could be in October. On the other hand, Republicans believe, almost to a person, that this encourages inactivity on the part of workers and staying home. In many cases, notably that of restaurant workers, it can be prosperous to collect government checks more so than going into a line of work that traditionally pays low wages and is very uncertain when it comes to tips. There's another factor, too. The restaurant workers in the Northeast, during the crisis, in very large numbers, fled for the South. Now, of course, in many southern states, such as Florida and Georgia, for example, the restrictions on numbers of people in restaurants and distancing were much more lax than they are in the Northeast. So it was easy for them to get jobs. Is this enough to really shake the restaurant industry in big cities, such as New York City or Philadelphia or Washington, D.C.? That's not certain. But there is an attitude that when people are not given the government checks, they will have to go back to work and earn money the old-fashioned way. As John Houseman used to say, earn it.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Rick. We'll talk to you again.
Cheryl Atkinson up next on the Saturday Morning Update, but right now we are headed to Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center at 7:16.
In Cap'n John, watch out for an accident southbound on the Cap'n John Parkway near the Clara Barton Parkway. Looks like an accident involving an overturned vehicle. In Lanham, there is an accident now westbound on 50, the John Hanson Highway at the exit ramp to go onto the Beltway. The off-ramp is partially blocked due to this incident. Also, looking at some slow traffic on DC 295 northbound between East Capitol Street and Benning Road, reports of a work zone in the area. Now from GarageJoyPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
We'll see partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies today. We'll have filtered sunshine at times. It will be hotter, though. Highs back into the lower 90s this afternoon. Also, the outside chance for a stray shower through the afternoon hours, but a very low possibility for that. As we head later on tonight, lows back in the 50s to around 60 degrees under partly cloudy skies. For your Sunday, partly cloudy, still hot, highs in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees, 7:18, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. And we are joined by Cheryl Atkinson. She is the author of Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. And she also hosts, of course, Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Well, you know, the book is How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. And we have seen the censorship of Donald Trump in social media and in the, you know, mainstream media. Basically, the only thing we hear about the former president is when they want to basically run a negative story on the former president. But he did make an announcement on his site this week, and I thought it was interesting to see what he may be up to.
Yeah, you know, who would have thought we'd be in a place where a newsmaker makes news and is allowed to be reported about only if certain people like and agree with him, but otherwise, in the case of President Trump, he's canceled and it's almost impossible to find information about him. When he puts out a statement or news release, I often put that on my website because it's so hard to find anywhere else. But anyway, yeah, there was a quick statement he put out on Friday that just said, many people have asked about the beautiful Boeing 757 that became so iconic during the Trump rallies. It was that big plane that had his name on it. And he says it's now being fully restored and updated, will be put back into service sometime prior to the end of the year. And then tantalizingly, he says it will soon be brought to a Louisiana facility for completion of work inspection, blah, blah, blah. And when completed, it will be better than ever and used at upcoming rallies. So he's talking about, I guess I would imagine, maybe appearing to endorse other people in the near future at some of their rallies, although I guess he leaves it open to the possibility he could be conducting his own.
Very interesting. And you can see that full release from former President Trump on the homepage at CherylAtkisson.com. Alzheimer's is such a dreadful disease, and any of us that have known anyone who has Alzheimer's, it is just so tragic to see the progression. It is a terminal disease, but there is hope. You have a story tomorrow?
Yeah, and I wish it were actually more hopeful than it turns out to be. I mean, it may be that this new drug, which is yet to be on the market, maybe it really will work. It's being touted as possibly, potentially, the first thing that could be a cure for early Alzheimer's, the way it works, because all the things on the market now are just treatments, nothing that cures. But unfortunately, it's mired in a lot of controversy, because when it came before FDA advisors in a meeting as to whether to recommend for approval, which the FDA itself said should be approved, none of the advisors voted for it. So you have to wonder why, because if anything, the advisors tend to go along with the drug companies. And it turns out that they don't think the data is there, the proper studies were not completed. They also have some really serious questions about the appearance of a conflict of interest, with some FDA officials working in a very close collaborative fashion with the drug company to try to get this drug to market. Just some really interesting twists and turns. I'll tell you about one of them. But the two giant studies that were supposed to help bring this drug to market were stopped partway through because the drug company conceded they were futile. They call them futility findings, that if they completed the studies, it would just be a waste of money because they weren't turning up anything. But weirdly, 9 months later, after consulting with the FDA, they came back and claimed, well, we missed some stuff. You know, there's really good data in here after all. And the FDA helped them craft it into a new application. So now they're applying to get the drug approved based in part on two studies that were never completed and can't be completed now because they were stopped midstream. So anyway, lots of twists and turns. Claims of conflict of interest. I personally, of course, hope the drug works. I hope they can get that proof there and put it out to the public. One little last controversy I'll mention, you'll hear in the story. The cost they're talking about, if it does get approved, charging something like $50,000 a year per person. So there's questions as to how our Medicare system could even stay afloat in a case like that. So lots of questions posed, even if this turns out to work.
But it is encouraging to see that there may be some light at the end of the tunnel, because up to this point, there really hasn't been a supposed cure or even a really good treatment for Alzheimer's that I'm aware of. So.
You're right. And, you know, a lot of people think this goes nowhere as well. But again, if they're right, and in retrospect, they found some good data in the studies, maybe there's some way to bring this to market or to use it, you know, to improve upon for something down the road, because as we all know, and lots of companies are trying, because there are so many millions of people that could benefit from this. I think they said that if the drug did go to market, they anticipate 10 million customers right away the first year, because so many people would want a drug like that.
Memorial Day is coming up next weekend. And, you know, we take it for granted here in the Washington area, if you're a resident, I don't know how often you go down to the mall and really enjoy the national monuments. And for Memorial Day weekend, there is one special place, and there will be attention focused on it. And you're doing a story on this as well tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, what we did, we do little features sometimes at the end of the program. It's particularly scenic things. And we decided, coming upon Memorial Day, to visit the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And I think everybody knows about that iconic image of the old guard marching back and forth. This tomb is guarded 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. But, you know, we don't all know too much about the history behind it. We've got some interesting facts and a really nice look at this just to help us kind of remember as we move into Memorial Day.
That's great. That is tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, full measure. Cheryl, as always, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
And you too. It is 7:25 Saturday morning update. Tony Schaefer is coming up. We'll also be talking with KT McFarland and a couple of interesting national days in the week ahead. Stay with us.
Just like old times, join me, Dan Bongino, live on WMAL weekdays at noon beginning May 24th.
Saturday morning update 7:28. I don't usually pay much attention to national days because usually it's just something kind of, I don't know, minuscule, kind of goofy. But our producer, Jane Houghton, brought to my attention a couple of really important ones in the week ahead. May 25th is National Brown Bagot Day. May 25th is also National Wine Day. May 28th is National Hamburger Day, and it's also National Brisket Day. So some key dates in the week ahead, and we can't forget, going into Memorial Day weekend, National Road Trip Day in the week ahead. 7:28, Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. President Biden not ruling out a meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, but...
The idea of never meeting with North Korea, I would make sure that my team had met with his their counterparts, and I knew exactly what we were meeting on.
Biden and South Korean President Moon Jae-in met at the White House yesterday. Both are deeply concerned about North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Biden says the U.S. is committed to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Two prison guards who were in charge of keeping watch over Jeffrey Epstein the night he killed himself admit they falsified records, but they'll avoid jail time.
The workers, Tobin Knoll and Michael Thomas, were accused of sleeping and browsing the Internet instead of watching Epstein the night he took his own life in August of 2019. They were charged with lying on prison records to make it seem like they made the required checks of Epstein. New York City medical examiners ruled his death a suicide. As part of a plea deal, the duo will serve no time behind bars. Chris DeMeo, Fox News.
Arlington National Cemetery is fully reopening on Monday. You'll once again be able to visit the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, President JFK's gravesite, and the Memorial Amphitheater. You won't need a mask outside, but you will inside. WMAL Sports, the Capitals lost to the Bruins 4-1. The Bruins now lead their first-round East Division playoff series 3-1. Game 5's tomorrow at 7. The Nats beat the Orioles 4-2. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Lanham, the accident on 50 westbound at the ramp to the Beltway cleared. All lanes now open. There is an accident to watch out for southbound on the Cabin John Parkway near the Clara Barton Parkway, and also an accident on Knowles Avenue near Summit Avenue. Also getting reports of a crash now on Adelphi Road after University Boulevard. Watch for lane closures there. Also, you will find a work zone right now if you're traveling on DC 295 northbound as you approach Benning Road. Traffic is jammed headed from East Capitol Street. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A fair amount of clouds to start the weekend. We'll call it some filtered sunshine. The upper level clouds streaming in. High temperatures today will be hot once again. Should reach the lower 90s. Heading into tonight, partly cloudy. Lows back in the 50s in the suburbs. Lower 60s around town. Beginning to your Sunday, we'll still have a hot end of the weekend. Highs in the lower 90s under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett with Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:37, this is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Rick, always great to join you.
All right, Tony, we are in day two of the ceasefire between Hamas and Israel, both sides saying that they will honor the agreement as long as the other side doesn't attack. Humanitarian aid now arriving there. I wanted to ask you about the difference in the military tactics of Hamas and Israel. A lot of criticism from members of the squad, Bernie Sanders criticizing Israel. But I wanted to ask you about the tactics because it has appeared that Israel is very precise when they go in to attack a Hamas target. And as an example, the headquarters of the Associated Press, I believe, also headquartered one of the Hamas intelligence offices. So they have a tendency to basically put their installations into civilian areas, don't they?
Yeah, dirty tricks. So, well, you outlined it well, because Hamas is a terrorist organization, not a military organization. It uses a military structure to conduct it and plan its operations, and that's where it ends. To fire rockets, Iranian-made rockets, I might add, indiscriminately into civilian populations, which are largely innocent with no military value or targets, is an act of terror. That is Hamas. So the Israelis have been, in my judgment, far too restrained. I'll just get that out there right now. And they've been very careful in making sure that they hit only legitimate terror targets. Unfortunately, Rick, as you mentioned, Hamas tends to use businesses like the AP, and I'm sorry, the AP knew exactly what they were doing. They knew Hamas had an intelligence organization in the basement. They aren't that stupid. And they use things like schools, restaurants, other things where they will place items of value, rocket stores, headquarters, things like that. So the Israelis are left with a very difficult choice, but one I think they have made at times to hit those targets no matter what's there. Otherwise, you've seen they're very creative in their use of drones. They've been actually sending drones out to drop tear gas in some of the riots and some of the areas they have to deal with. So I think that's the mark of difference between the two organizations, is precision and clear need to minimize civilian death versus Hamas, who just wants to kill and make a point that they don't want to allow for the existence of the Israelis or the Israeli state. Those are the differences.
Well, if you only saw the headline on the story, it was that Israel basically took down the Associated Press media building. You had to go a little further into it to find out that Israel actually warned them in advance that they were going to attack that building.
Yeah.
And, you better clear out your belongings and yourself.
Yeah, DOS do protest too much when they came back and said, oh, well, we barely escaped with our lives. Well, I guess if you're like 300 pounds and have a hard time moving down hallways, perhaps, but they had plenty of time, and they were fully knowledgeable, based on everything I've read, of who their tenants were. And, for those members of the media listening, just make sure you know who you're paying your rent to, just saying.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, who's in the basement? Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, geez. So this is completely insane that they didn't know. But to that point, and this is something I think the Israelis, if I were in charge right now, I don't know if I would be quite so restrained as the Israelis, because until there is a clear and definitive victory over Hamas, this is all going to happen again. This happened a few years ago. It's going to happen again, because Hamas gains money. Every time they do this, Rick, we pay them off. All this money that we gave them, Biden gave them $235 million back a couple months ago, and guess who's going to go pay them all again? Hamas benefits from this. It's one of those things, like Reagan said, if anything you subsidize, you're going to get more of. Well, we subsidize this, we're going to get more of it.
I wanted to turn to a story we've heard something about, and that is the Department of Defense and the military rooting out quote-unquote extremists in the ranks.
Yeah.
And I believe there's a group that is being put together, the Countering Extremism Working Group. And tell us a little bit about what's going on in the Department of Defense.
Well, this working group is not new. As a matter of fact, I produced a movie, a show a few years ago called Chain of Command, where we actually highlighted this group's work when they were looking at ISIS. Well, now it's been turned internally, which is always dangerous. And this working group is supposed to be examining options for Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, to quote-unquote root out white supremacists. And one of the organizations that they've brought in, according to a memo that is out there, this is public information, is the Southern Poverty Law Center. And a lot of people have problems with that because they are, you know, a racist organization. They've said things and done things which really show that they are not out to try to achieve racial balance and equities. And I think this is something that, that people have to look at. Plus, the other aspect of this, Rick, that I think people may not be fully aware of, and John Kirby had to get out there and deny it, which means it's very much true, is that Task and Purpose is reporting on how certain people in the Pentagon are going to be putting together technology by third parties so they can avoid any oversight to go out and start monitoring U.S. military members' social media. Completely illegal. And they're denying it. But according to people I've spoken to, it's completely true. And it's just a matter of how they're trying to get around the First Amendment restrictions. So think about this. This organization, the Pentagon, has brought in organizations which are not supportive of American values regarding equality, and now they're talking about launching very sophisticated technology to go monitor people's social media. This is very serious. It's not constitutional, and it's a great danger to good order and discipline of the military.
Well, I think the big question is going to be, how do you define an extremist? The way Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would define an extremist might be different than the way Josh Hawley would define an extremist. So,
well, we all need to agree on definitions, no doubt. But with that point, even the way people like Ocasio-Cortez define things, simply having a political disagreement with any progressive policy makes you an extremist. So we have to understand that there are certain folks who are not going to be rational about this, no matter who they are, based on their own personal politics.
Hey, I got a minute on this one.
Yeah.
Senate Republicans grilled a Biden nominee to be the intelligence community's top lawyer because his recent law firm work for the Chinese government and Huawei came up. Question mark there, Tony.
Yeah. So, wow. You know, that's what I've been saying. It's like, you know, I've been kind of jokingly calling Joe Biden Sal Zaiden, you know, CSO with an X with the Biden, because what's going on here with the president? Why are we getting all these people into positions of authority which actually indicate that they've been working in some form with or engaged with China in some form? So why are we picking this guy? There's a lot of lawyers out there. You can't swing a dead cat in Washington without hitting one. And you know, why this guy? And I've got to ask hard questions, as we all do, about why are you bringing in people who clearly may not be compromised, but clearly have, you know, worked very closely with Chinese firms, with Chinese organizations, and the likelihood of you maintaining contact with or after you leave is very high. So, and the guy, this guy is supposed to get access to a lot of very sensitive information regarding weapon systems, acquisition, intelligence, all these things he'll see. So, again, I don't think he's the right guy. I don't know why they pick him. He's not like some genius who's come up through the military ranks or intelligence community who has all this knowledge. So it's a very dangerous thing, and I think people need to examine this way more carefully.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and you can check out his podcast at thelondoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Rick.
Really appreciate it. We're at 7:46. We're going to check out the traffic with Michelle Murray and also the weather, and then we'll be back with KT McFarland on the Saturday Morning Update.
Slow-going traffic through a work zone on DC 295 northbound between Benning Road and Burroughs Avenue. At least one lane is closed through the work zone, and traffic is slow through the area. Also, you will find crash activity right now on the Cabin John Parkway southbound near the Clara Barton Parkway and on Knowles Avenue right near Summit Avenue in Montgomery County. Also, there is a reported crash right now traveling on Adelphi Road northbound after University Boulevard. Use caution there. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
We'll see partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies today. We'll have filtered sunshine at times. It will be hotter, though. Highs back into the lower 90s this afternoon. Also, the outside chance for a stray shower through the afternoon hours, but a very low possibility for that. As we head later on tonight, lows back in the 50s to around 60 degrees under partly cloudy skies. For your Sunday, partly cloudy, still hot, highs in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:48 on the Saturday morning update. The Saturday morning update, it's 7:50. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are honored to be joined by K.T. McFarland every week. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
A report from Reuters, this is the way they describe it. The Biden administration waived sanctions on the company behind Russia's Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline to Germany and its chief executive. So the sanctions have been lifted on the pipeline. A lot of criticism from Republicans and others on the Hill. And how did it strike you when we waived those sanctions? A lot of people are saying Biden is being weak versus Vladimir Putin.
Well, he didn't only waive the sanctions, he waived America first. And now we're good old days. We're back to America last.
It didn't take long, did it?
No, everybody else's interests are going to be taken care of at the American expense. And look, supposedly we lifted these sanctions to keep the Germans in cheap natural gas from Russia. We didn't want to make those Germans unhappy. And part of the rebuilding effort after the Trump administration. But look, the reality is Germany needs us more than we need them. I mean, if I'd been in office, President Trump is, I bet he would have said the following. I would have reminded them that we spend billions to keep U.S. troops in Germany to protect them against the Russians. So why should we do that if Germany refuses to protect itself economically from the Russians? And frankly, that economic threat is a far more realistic threat to their national and economic security than a Russian invasion into Germany. So I would have said, look, here's our new thinking. America First says, we're going to give you a choice, Germany. We can pull all the U.S. troops out of Germany, save a lot of money, relocate them to Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary, which frankly is a lot more realistic to protect Europe from any kind of military invasion from Russia, or we can do something else. You cancel that Nord Stream pipeline and you buy American natural gas. Frankly, we'll even be really good guys. We'll throw in an effort to rebuild or to build liquefied natural gas ports so that you can have cheap access to cheap American energy. And you guys choose. Because, look, this whole thing is so reflective of the chasing the chimera of globalism. And it just expresses weakness. I mean, I'm struck by the Ted Cruz tweet yesterday, whatever it was, showing the Russian military recruitment poster with this really tough, strong Russian guy doing push-ups, and then the American military recruitment poster, which was, I don't know, it looked like an invitation to join a preschool class. I mean, what are these guys thinking? This is a nasty world out there, and it's time to get some tough elbows, because diplomacy, in my experience of over 50 years, diplomacy, foreign policy, international relations, it's like Shark Tank. The minute others sense weakness, especially our adversaries sense weakness, the sharks all come circling around. And that's what you're seeing. You know, the Germans are pushing us around. The Russians are pushing us around. The Chinese are pushing us around. The Iranians are pushing us around. And why? It's because they all sense weakness, and they're getting away with it. So it's probably a pretty smart move on their part.
And you mentioned liquid natural gas. We've got an abundance of LNG here, and you know, there was a big push for exports of LNG. It would have made maybe some sense to be exporting American LNG over to Germany as opposed to having them get it from Russia. But let's turn to Hamas versus Israel and the Democrats versus the Democrats when it comes to Palestinians and Israelis. A lot of comment from the squad this week, a lot of controversy, and Bernie Sanders chiming in. President Biden is trying to walk the fine line between Hamas and Israel, and also the fine line between the Democrats on either side of Hamas and Israel.
Yeah, I don't envy him the position that he's in. I mean, frankly, he needs the loony left, the far radical left of his own party to make up the difference, because he was elected to govern as a moderate, but he needs the loony left, those handful of votes, to stay in power, whether it's to get his legislation passed in the House or in the Senate. And so he's got a kowtow. Like, they have the whip hand. This small number of people have the whip hand on the Democrat Party because, again, sign of weakness, Biden won't really stand up to these guys who have no place else to go but the Democrat Party. But in any event, they seem to hold the whip hand, whether it's this massive spending program, whether it's defund the police, cancel culture, America's evil, or now Israel is Satan. I get it, but what I think Biden should have done and has not yet done, and I sure hope he does, is to go out to the American people and say, hey, violence is bad. Violence against our fellow citizens is bad no matter what form it takes, whether it's against African-American crime in the crime world or whether it's against Jews in their synagogues. It's just, it's not the American way to do things, because the anti-Semitic attacks that broke out in New York, and they've broken out all over the country, are a really bad place to be. The same thing, by the way, is happening in Europe, which has a history of anti-Semitism, and this opportunity has now arisen where the anti-Israel, anti-Jewish demonstrations and violence can rear its ugly head again. So I sure hope President Biden comes out and says, I condemn violence against our fellow citizens in all forms. But he hasn't. Just the opposite. In fact, the far the loony left of his own party, he's taken an opportunity to praise the woman, Congressman Rashida Tlaib, who's Palestinian by birth, but also to praise her for being a great fighter when she's the one leading the call to defund Israel, to condemn Israelis, to promote the Palestinian terrorists. I just think it's a foolish place for President Biden to be, and a sad place for any American president.
Well, you mentioned that, and the progressives are the ones who are so strongly opposed to anything that is racist or, you know, against a certain people. But the messaging from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar and others in the squad have ratcheted up that anti-Semitic feeling around the country.
Yeah, and they're doing it for obvious reasons. It's politically advantageous to them. It's just sad. It's just sad to see that groups of Americans are using this opportunity to go after a long-standing, close ally of the United States in the Middle East. You know, if it wasn't for Israel's help, we would have had a really hard time dealing with the terrorist threat that was coming out of the region. And to have the president's press secretary come out and belittle the Arab-Israeli peace accords, the Abraham Accord. I mean, belittle them, I guess why? Because Trump did it, so not invented here. So the Biden administration is so neuralgically blind to anything that Trump has done, including even his achievements, that they have to come out and belittle that. I just think it's going, look, I get really depressed, Rick, when I think about that where the country is right now. But then I think, this is Jimmy Carter 2.0, and where are we going to be in 18 months? High inflation, high unemployment, stagnant economy, very high gasoline prices. And when the sugar high of Biden spending wears off, the American people are going to say, wait a minute. And so I think 24 months from now, they're going to toss out the loony left. They're going to change Congress into Republican hands. And in 2024, the White House will be controlled by Republicans. The Senate will be controlled by Republicans, and the House will be controlled by Republicans. So I think this is Jimmy Carter 2.0. I'm going to spend my next couple of months and years or so looking around for Ronald Reagan 2.0.
You know, it's always great to leave the show on a high note with you, KT. I feel much better now than I did starting at 6 o'clock this morning when I was going through all the news. And thank you for that, KT.
Ronald Reagan 2.0. There is a lot of possibilities. It's a rich bench.
KT McFarland, and we really appreciate it, KT. It's always great to have you on each week, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thank you so much, KT.
Thanks for the opportunity, Rick.
My pleasure. That's it for the Saturday morning update. Like I said, we'll leave you on a high note. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.